sci-fi show, Outcast. Welcome to another Outcast, everybody. And today we have an interview with Dr. William Lane Craig of Biola University. If you have a look in the show notes, there'll be a link to Dr. Craig's website that contains many articles on all sorts of topics. But today, he's going to help us explore the idea of omniscience. So, without further blather on my part, let's get down to the interview. Well, thank you for joining us on the Sci-Fi Show today, Dr. Craig. If we could start off by, could you tell me a bit about yourself and your background?
Well, I'm a Midwesterner from Peoria, Illinois, raised in Iowa, and went to college at Wheaton College in the Chicago area. And then after graduating from college, I attended Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, where I did master's degrees in philosophy of religion and church history and the history of Christian thought. And married my wife, Jeanette, at that time, and went on then to Great Britain together, where I did my doctoral work at the University of Birmingham under John Hick on the cosmological argument for God's existence. And then after spending almost a year in France, we moved on to Germany, where I was a fellow of the Alexander von Humboldt Foundation and did a doctorate in theology at the University of Munich under the direction of Wolfhard Pallenberg. And then we came back to the States after that to start living in Deerfield, Illinois, and teaching at Trinity and to start a family, and had two children, Charity Joy and our son John.
Okay. So, on the question of omniscience, you'd be something of an expert then, or at least certainly qualified to talk about it.
This was a project that I began to do while teaching at Trinity. I wanted to do a book on the coherence of theism, or the biblical concept of God, and so I thought I would start with the divine attribute of omniscience. And I suddenly discovered that this opened up into a black hole. It was such a vast subject, and I spent the next 7 years or so working on that single attribute alone. So I did invest a considerable amount of research in that subject.
Okay. So, how would you define omniscience?
Well, traditionally, omniscience has been defined in terms of God's propositional knowledge, that for any proposition P, if P is true, then God believes that P and does not believe not P. Or, to put it more simply, God knows only and all truths.
Okay. Now, this includes knowledge of the future as well as the current state of the universe?
If you think that there are true future tense statements, then yes, God would have to know these if he's omniscient, because an omniscient being must know all truths. And so if there are truths about the future, if some future tense statements are true, then God must know and believe those truths.
Okay, what do you mean by future tense statements?
Well, it would be a statement that has the verb in the future tense. For example, Christopher Columbus will discover America was once true, but it's no longer true. What's true now is the past tense statement, Christopher Columbus discovered America. So by changing the tense of the verb in the sentence, you can express a present tense, a future tense, a past tense proposition. Or you can make more complicated tenses. For example, in English, we have things like the future perfect. In 2 days' time, I will have been done with my project. Or the past perfect tense. He had visited his aunt on earlier occasions. So those are all different tenses And if there are true, tensed statements about the future, then any being that is omniscient must know those statements.
Okay. For there to be tensed statements, that would imply that there is, in a sense, an absolute now that's traversing...
Not necessarily. I think that's a different subject. I am inclined to believe there's an absolute now. But say the special theory of relativity is right, and that every observer in motion has associated with him a reference frame that determines a now for him. Well, then it would just mean that the now would be relative to different observers in motion, but there would be associated with each reference frame a set of past tense truths, a set of present tense truths about what is now happening in that frame, and a set of future tense truths about what will happen according to that frame. So making the now relative to reference frames, as is done in the special theory of relativity, doesn't do anything to eliminate the future. It would just make it relative to reference frames. So when I say that God would know the truth of future tensed statements, you would have to relativize that to some sort of a reference frame.
Oh, okay. So the next question would seem to be, if God knows the future, does this require that the future be fixed in the sense that the universe is deterministic?
Not at all. The future could be entirely random and causally indeterminate with respect to the present. In fact, some scientists who study the subatomic realm described by quantum physics think that this kind of indeterminacy reigns in the subatomic realm. So we could imagine events in the future, say the exact time of the decay of a radioactive isotope. We could imagine that event to be causally indeterminate, completely random. But that doesn't mean there isn't a future tense truth about it. So that to say that there are truths about the future doesn't in any way mean that everything is determined to happen.
Okay. So you would contend that libertarian free will is compatible with the idea of omniscience?
Well, it certainly is compatible, I think, with the idea of omniscience. And those who think that it's not usually adopt some sort of fatalism in an attempt to show that if God foreknows the future, then everything in the future happens necessarily. And it's important to distinguish fatalism from determinism. Determinism says that everything in the future is causally determined by what happens in the present. If you know the present position and velocity of every particle in the universe, then everything in the future is predictable. And you remember the famous saying of Laplace that he would be able to predict the exact state of the universe at any point in the future or any point in the past given Newton's laws of motion and knowledge of the present position and velocity of every particle in the universe. That's determinism, that everything is causally determined. But the people who think that foreknowledge is incompatible with freedom usually aren't talking about determinism. They're talking about fatalism. And the idea there is that if God knows what is going to happen, then it happens necessarily, that there is no contingency left, that everything is fated to occur. And the problem with that argument, there's multiple problems with it. The argument in favor of it, I think, is logically fallacious. But at a more deeper level, I think fatalism is just unintelligible because it posits a constraint on my freedom and on events, which is a non-causal constraint, a non-determining constraint, and I don't think we can make any sense of that at all. It's utterly mysterious to say that even though my choices in the future are causally indeterminate and up to me, that somehow I'm fated to do something just because God knows about it. I mean, what kind of constraint is that? What is fate? It's just a word. It's not a thing. So it's hard even to make sense of fatalism that the theological fatalist is propounding.
Okay. So you would just dismiss as not particularly coherent someone that says, if God knows the future, then you don't have the ability to choose otherwise.
Well, I do think that is incoherent, yeah, because it posits a constraint on my freedom, which is utterly mysterious and unintelligible, because it's not supposed to be a causal constraint. This event foreknown by God could be the random motion of a subatomic particle, which is completely causally indeterminate. And yet, if God knows it, then somehow it's supposed to be fated to occur and to occur necessarily. And to me, that is incoherent. It just it's unintelligible. But in addition to that, I would say, as I mentioned before, there's no good reason to believe in fatalism. In any case, those who propound fatalism typically offer an argument that is just logically invalid. It goes something like this, that necessarily, if God foreknows that X will happen, then X will happen. The second premise would be, God foreknows that X will happen, and the conclusion is, therefore, X will necessarily happen. Well, that's a logically fallacious argument. That commits a common fallacy in what's called modal logic, which is the logic of necessity and possibility. From the fact that necessarily, if God foreknows that X will happen, then X will happen, and that God foreknows that X will happen, all that follows from that is that X will happen. But it does not follow that X will happen necessarily. X will happen, but X may well happen contingently. And if it concerns my free choice, I can choose to do otherwise. And if I were to choose differently, then God would have had different foreknowledge instead. So that God's foreknowledge no more determines or fates my behavior than the forecasts of an infallible barometer determines or necessitates the weather.
Oh, I see. So God's knowledge reflects your choice rather than constrains it.
I think that's exactly right. The way I like to put it is that God's foreknowledge may be chronologically prior to your choice, but your choice is logically prior to God's foreknowledge. Because, as you say, what he knows reflects the event. It's not that the event reflects what he knows.
Great. So the next question is, from reading some of your papers and stuff, you're what's known as a Molinist. Is that correct?
Yes.
Could you tell me a bit about that?
This is a theory of divine omniscience which was propounded by a 16th century Jesuit theologian named Luis Molina. And it attempts to explain at a deeper level how God foreknows what will happen in the future. And the way it works is this. Molina thought that God, logically prior to his creation of the world, before he decided which world to create, God knew how every person that he could possibly create would freely choose in any circumstances that God might possibly put him in. So, for example, he knew what Peter would do if he were placed in such and such circumstances. Then God decrees to create a certain order or set of circumstances and to place certain creatures in them. And then as a result of his knowledge and his choice of circumstances and creatures, God's foreknowledge of what will happen just falls out automatically, because since God knows how every person would choose in whatever circumstances he were in, and since God knows what circumstances and what persons he has chosen to create, he knows automatically what they will do. So that's basically the theory that Molina gave for divine foreknowledge.
Okay. That seems to make sense. Takes a little bit to get your head around it, I suppose.
Right. It's subtle because we in native English speakers often don't understand or use correctly the subjunctive case. And in this case, we are talking about subjunctive conditionals, like if Jones were in circumstances C, then he would freely do A. Now, God might, in fact, never create Jones. He might never place Jones in circumstances C. But nevertheless, the subjunctive conditional, if Jones were in C, he would freely choose A, is a truth known to God. And so the theory of Molinism says that God not only has knowledge of all indicative conditionals, like if Jones is in C, he will do A, but he also has knowledge of the subjunctive conditionals. If he were in C, he would do A freely. And it's his knowledge of these subjunctive conditionals that gives God the key to his foreknowledge of the future.
Okay. I see how that works, I think.
Good.
Okay, the next question, related to this. Do you think God is in time? If there is an absolute now, is God now, I suppose?
I do think that God is in time since the creation of the universe. I think God created time and, so to speak, stepped into time in order to relate to his temporal creatures. So I do think that since the moment of creation, God is in time. And I am persuaded that because of God's privileged status, that the now associated with God's time or his consciousness is an absolute now, a privileged now, and that therefore what is called a Lorentzian interpretation of relativity theory is correct. Lorentz was a precursor and colleague of Albert Einstein, and it was Lorentz's equations that came to form the heart of Einstein's special theory of relativity. They're called the Lorentz equations. But Einstein gave a very different interpretation to Lorentz's equations than Lorentz himself gave. For Lorentz, there is an absolute now, there is absolute length and absolute simultaneity, but he thought that we just can't detect it because our motion affects our measuring instruments. Clocks in motion slow down. Measuring rods in motion shrink up in the direction of motion. And so relativity for Lorentz is simply a matter of measurement. We can't measure the absolute simultaneity or absolute length of physical events, but he thought nevertheless they really did exist. And so I'm persuaded that Lorentz is right. I think that if you have a God who is in time, then his now would define an absolute now, and therefore relations of absolute simultaneity and absolute length.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us today, Dr. Craig. I think that that gives the listeners of the show a feel for the idea of omniscience.
Good. So, my pleasure.
Thank you very much for that. I hope everybody enjoyed that interview, and Dr. Craig will be back on for a future interview about a topic I'll keep as a secret for the time being. But watch out for that in the future. Talk to you next time. The Sci-Fi Show is copyright Jason Money, 2006. It's released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative License, and the song Big Planet is used by permission of Nova Surfer. More great Nova Surfer tracks can be found at novasurfer.ml.